Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by the new Samsung Flex Wash and Flex Dry washer and dryer pair available at Home Depot. These innovative appliances are the first ever to allow you to wash two loads and dry two loads of laundry at the same time in the same machine. So you could wash all of your clothes that require your hot take water and cold take water at once when you do your laundry. You don't have to mix the different colors and fabrics together. You could risk color transfer and the fabric damage, but forget about that. When Flex Wash integrates a large capacity lower washer for everyday washes and an additional washer for separate colors or delicates, Flex Dry also integrates a large tumble dryer for everyday items and a flat dryer for delicates that can't stand the hot takes of the dryer. Both the washer and the dryer have a number of innovative features to make doing laundry easier on you and your clothes. Flex Wash also offers a steam wash, for removing stains, and a self-clean to keep the washer odor-free. FlexDry features multi-steam to steam away odors and wrinkles, while SensorDry optimizes drying temperatures to avoid damage to your clothes. Both are Wi-Fi connected, allowing you to set and start the machines and receive an alert when your load is finished. Together, FlexWash and FlexDry offers the ultimate flexibility to provide the best possible care for your clothes. The Samsung FlexWash and FlexDry washer and dryer pair available at Home Depot. Coming to you live from the magma center of the sun, it's the first ever Rob Has a Podcast Survivor Hot Takeoff. And now here is the man who has already smashed every thermometer in my house here. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the very highly anticipated first ever Survivor Hot Takeoff, where we will be judging the hottest takes, around. They're about to break it down, and we're very excited to bring in the panel here to judge these hot takes here today on this very special episode. First, he is the co-creator of the Hot Takeoff that inspired this podcast. He and his co-host, Alexander Chester, on the 32 Fans podcast, had the original Hot Takeoff that had nothing to do with Survivor, but that very graciously invited me to be the judge, which really started this whole process to get here today with the Survivor Hot Takeoff. He is my co-host on the Seinfeld post-show recap. Please welcome back to the podcast, Akiva Whitaker. Akiva, how are you?
I'm excited to be here, Rob.
Yes, this is very, very exciting. This is, feels like that you could cut the tension with a knife right now.
It's true. I feel like people are nervous. Everyone, we got hundreds of takes. People sent in hundreds of takes, really. The email address. Let me tell the listeners how like organized and prepared you are.
Yeah.
Rob, not only was the email address for this podcast, which I think was hottake@robhasawebsite, not only did Rob set that up so you know whoever was going to read the takes could send that, you also set up just in case people would make a mistake and send it to Hot Takes instead of Hot Take at Rob is a website. You sent up that email, and we got like 15 emails to that wrong email also. So Rob is really like, Rob is thinking like three
Not
steps
my first
ahead.
Rodeo, Keev.
Rob is thinking three steps ahead of everyone at all times. Listen, that's why you're the king.
Okay. Thank you very much, Keev. Very excited to get into everything here with you today. And then I felt like we needed a third person to help Keev and I judge the takes. Two judges is no good. You need three judges. It's been way too long since we had her on the podcast. We brought back Liana Borg. Liana, how are you?
Doing great. I'll do my best to not be a Paula Abdul, but I think as a judgmental millennial from the internet, this is right up my alley. I can't wait to rate these hot takes.
We are not worried about you being Abdul-esque here today on the Hot Takeoff. I know that you
Who was the Nebby lady on American Idol? That's who I'm going to be. Like, who was the one that was like, they put her in for a season and everyone's like, she's not famous. How did she get on? That could be me. Okay. Oh, Cara DeGuardio? Am I making this up? Yeah. Is this like a fever dream?
Yes, she was like a vestigial judge. I feel like that she might have even been like a fourth judge at one point.
Yeah, that's when the show started going downhill, the Cara era.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
I'm a dunkle.
Turning point.
Okay, no, we only have hot take judges here today, and we're going to be rotating and getting the takes submitted to us by the listeners of the podcast. Keith, how many takes did we get?
We got probably about 250, 300 takes
wow.
total.
Wow, I didn't think it was that
a lot
many.
Of takes. Yeah, well, we over 200 people submitted takes, but a lot of people submitted more. So it could even be more than 300 takes.
Okay, so we took them. We are looking for the best of the best. Akiva screened all of them. I got to see some of them as they were rolling in, but I wasn't following it super closely. But Akiva has read through every single take. And so, Akiva, what was the criteria you used to judge whether or not something made it into the show?
You know, dozens of people wrote in and gave us takes along the lines of, like, you know, Yule is really overrated, or, you know, like, Gabon is a top 13 season. And, you know, maybe your takes are correct, and, like, maybe they're, it's, you know, you're saying everyone thinks this one thing is good, and I know that it's bad, or vice versa. But at a certain point, like, there's, you know, every winner could either be good or bad. Every season is either good or bad. So there aren't a lot, there's a few, but there aren't a lot of, you know, this player stinks, even though you think it's good, he's good, or this season is real, you know, this is my favorite season, you know, Survivor Guatemala is 1,000 times better than any other season, stuff like that. Well, I was looking for original thoughts, think macro, think like, you know, big picture type things, and really impressed me. I want to hear something I haven't heard before, you know? Like, there's right, and then there's hot.
I like the fact that Gabon went in as 13. Like, if you're really going to go for a hot take, like, make it top three.
Yeah.
This is why, Rob, that's why Liana's here, because I literally just emailed that to like, another podcaster. Someone was like, what do they look like? And I'm like, why would you ever email us and say, literally, like, because 10 people wrote the same email about Gabon being underrated, but all of them were like, Gabon is a top quarter season, or top 15. Go big or go home, right? Liana, this is why Liana's here. Yeah. I'm excited. This is
exactly.
Give me a hot take. Don't give us something you don't believe in, but don't come at us with that weak stuff. We'll reject it.
And I think that's a good point. And let's just sort of frame what we're looking for here in hot takes. I gave this instruction out when I gave out the email address, but we are looking for hot takes. So first off, number one, it needs to be something that is a fact. That was something that is accurate and true, and also something that goes against conventional wisdom. So you want to go out there and tell us something that you believe that you can also prove that we can think about and say, boy, that really goes against the grain. That is a hot take. I like that.
So I just want to add that also part of my criteria is, does it elicit some type of emotional reaction from me? Is there, you know, like, is this a clickbaity thing that I would want to click the link? I wanted to generate some type of emotional reaction, like I'm doing emotional reactions, which translate really well on a podcast, but yes.
Yeah, so I used to say, okay, sure, yeah, the clickbait almost is like, is this food gonna make you lose 9 pounds? Like, oh, okay. But then if the answer is no, then that's bad,
right?
So we want, like,
right,
like, here's this one simple trick you could do that's going to make everybody like you. Like, okay, and then it works. Yes, good, hot take. I wasn't thinking.
No, your take should make people mad. Like, when we did the actual hot take off, like, I told Rob, like, I'm going to hurt people's feelings. Like, there's a lot of people out there who are aunts and uncles. And when I said, like, if you're an aunt or an uncle who cares about your nephew or niece, you're a creep. People were mad about that.
Mm-hmm.
But
sure.
Listen, people have to hear things certain times, you know, sometimes.
Okay, I will post a link to that hot take off if you want to hear. Although I have to say that on that hot take off, I didn't think that the takes were especially too spicy.
Oh, you're such a hater, Rob.
Okay. Well, I'm tough to impress on these hot takes. Okay.
Rob is our Simon. I'm the Kara.
Yeah, the Simon Cowell.
Liana's the Paula, or trying not to be the Paula, yeah. And you're definitely the Simon Cowell.
I feel like you're more of the Randy, Keeve.
Oh, I'm going to say dog a lot.
Is it, yeah, exactly.
Keeve dog.
It's a hot take for you, dog.
Yeah, the dog pound. Okay. All right. So I guess anything else to set up at the top, or we're going to just dive right into this? People are like, please get to it already.
Yeah, let's get to it.
Okay. All right. So who's going to start with the first take? We're going to rotate reading. Also, Keeve also has stripped the names. So this is a little bit voice style. We don't know the names, where, you know, it could be where we say, okay, this take is from so-and-so, and be like, oh, I hate that guy. He's so annoying on Twitter. Or it could be like, oh, we love this person. Oh, you know, we don't want to offend this person. So we do not know whose takes are from whom. Very much our chairs are to the backs of the taker, and then Keeve will give us the name at the end.
Wait, can I ask, can I maybe suggest one more thing? What if we do also like America's Got Talent style, where let's say a couple of these takes are pretty long. What if, like, we each get one X where we could say, like, I've heard enough, we're not even grading this take.
Okay, I like this. I've got the taboo buzzer here. So you could stop a take immediately, that freeze a take, it's too cold?
I think we each get one. I think it's not fair to really, if we just keep freezing, especially, Rob could get cranky. He's a tough grader. He might just X every take and then there's no winner.
Right.
We should add up front, the winner gets a spot on a season 35 Survivor podcast.
Yes.
Is that correct?
I'll bring the person who is the owner of the hot take contest award that we should get to hear some hot takes during Survivor 35. So Survivor 35 will be hustlers, heroes, healers, and hot takes eventually.
Oh, that's right.
Okay.
So we each get one buzz.
Yes. Okay. So Keeve, I guess you want to get this party started?
Okay, let's go. Take number one. Again, no name. We'll give the name at the end.
Okay.
Here's the hot take. Survivor production wouldn't mind if a contestant died during filming.
Oh,
I'm not saying they're trying to
Let me get this buzzer ready. Let me get this buzzer ready.
I can't tell if Liana's Xing us. See, that elicited a reaction from Liana. That's what she's looking for.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not saying, the person continues, that they're trying to kill the contestants. This would undoubtedly be a tragic occurrence. However, there is evidence that producers do hope for serious medical emergencies and that the show would benefit in some ways from the exposure. And the person lists some evidence. Number one,
I feel like that's kind of like, I'm not saying I'm racist, but...
Yeah,
that's right. Number one, Mark Burnett's famous reaction to the show's first major medical emergency, where he reportedly expressed delight that Scoopin' fell into the fire because then people would know the show was real. Number two, Jeff's insistence that Caleb's near-death experience in Koh Rang was the most dramatic and maybe the most compelling episode ever. And number three, there's precedent from international versions of Survivor in which contestants dying didn't ultimately affect the continuation of these series. The French version returned 2 years after the incident to similar ratings. Bulgarian version, that's my favorite. I love Bulgarian Survivor. Continued filming a season even after contestant died midway through. I feel like the lawyers are much tougher in America than Bulgaria and France. Mm-hmm. So American Survivor has seen that the tragic demise of contestant wouldn't necessarily spell the end of the show and could indeed lead to a ratings bump. Overall, Survivor has shown a willingness to embrace controversy and a desire to court the attention of the larger public consciousness. A contestant dying would definitely get Survivor back into the water cooler conversations.
Okay, Keith, do you want to explain the rating system for how we're going to do this?
Yeah, I think so. For the hot takeoff we did on a scale of 7, from 0 to 7, I'm not sure why that was my co-host's idea, and we did 0 to 7 peppers. Mike Bloom, who helped a lot with the picking the takes and gave some ideas for the podcast, and me came up with the idea where we go from 0 to 10, but it's not peppers because that has no real Survivor connotation. It's 10 burning camps when no one's around.
10 burning camps.
Suspiciously burning
camps.
But
should be so proud.
Okay. All right. And you can give it 0, right?
Oh, yeah. 0 to 10. You could probably even go negatives. There's no rules here.
Okay. Who's starting? Liana is up
so
first?
Do I give my number?
Yeah, give your number and if you have, you could give a take also, but yeah, your number and a take if you have one.
Okay, all right. So this is one that elicited some type of emotional reaction from me. So I'm going to give it, so this is where I know I'm going to end up arguing with Rob. I'm going to give it a 7. I know that maybe it's not factually correct, but this is pretty crazy. Like, I would say that this is, it may be not quite as hot as the dumpster fire that Mike Scoopin fell into after all of the Survivor stuff, but I think it's still pretty hot.
Okay, a 7 from Liana out of the gate for this.
Yeah, I agree. It elicited a reaction from me. It's one of the reasons I'm leading off with this take. I think it is a good take. It's not something people talk about a lot. It's not the most original thing I've ever heard in my life, but it's a pretty smart idea. In terms of how accurate it is, like, it's hard to say. It's better to compare other American shows than, like, a Bulgarian show just because, like, I don't know. I feel like there's so many lawyers involved in Survivor that would shut it down. But can you guys think of any show where a reality contestant died mid-season? Like, on The Challenge, two contestants died between the airing and, after they played but before it aired. Two very popular, like, zillion-time players died. And they basically, it was a terrible, like, they just talked about it in one terrible episode where they brushed it under the rug. But again, they didn't die on the watch of The Challenge.
Right.
Which, by the way, many, a couple production people did die on the watch of The Challenge last season, and it was not mentioned on the show. Anyway, I'm going to give this take. Can we go halves, Rob?
No, I think, pick a spot.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, 1 to 10. I mean, 0 to 10. I mean, you can land on a number.
Okay. I'm going to give it an 8.
An 8.
Yeah.
All right.
But see, like, there's no way that this is real. Come on. Like, we live in such a litigious society, right?
Exactly. And
does Survivor
but are you 100% sure?
Let me tell
are you 100% sure that the show would be canceled?
Okay, well, let me get my rating here. I will give this take 0 burning camps. 0.
Oh boy.
0. Because
that's the highest grade Rob's given all night, Liana.
It's not true. It's completely inaccurate. Sure, it is salacious, but Survivor there's 0% chance Survivor would be happy if a contestant died during the production of the show. And I have this on good authority. I have this on good authority that the show would not air. The show would be over. The series would end if the show...
Rob would have to go back to work.
Yes, I'd have to get really... Believe me, I've thought of this through, and it keeps me up at night. Boy, like...
Rob gets... Anytime they put a fat guy on the show, Rob, like, votes for, you know, roots for him to be first booth.
I'm... No, Keith... I say let's get rid of blindfold challenges. I don't want anything to happen. But the show, there's no way. They could not pivot from somebody, you know, there's some terrible accident. Something happens to a contestant. And then they'll pivot with, Tribal Council, tomorrow night, you have a day to think about this. You couldn't, the contestants couldn't go on, the production couldn't go on, the show, that you could not continue the show. And so for that reason of this is a just 100% that this is like some alternate reality where the show continues on, that this gets zero burning camps.
Liana, 0 is a wild score from Rob, by the way. That's nuts.
Fine. Way to be a Debbie Downer, Rob.
That's
Although we're talking about contestants dying, which is not so exciting.
Survivor the take is literally Survivor would be happy if one of the contestants died.
That they wouldn't mind. Maybe Survivor production wants the show to end. Maybe they're tired. Maybe that's why they wouldn't mind.
If they were tired. Engineering a person's murder is not going to...
It's not a murder. It could be some fat dude having a heart attack.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Okay. Guy could have a pre-existing condition.
If the take is Survivor could continue if a contestant died during production, we can
consider
that.
That's not hot enough, though. Okay, that's not... You're giving that an 8, and we're both giving that a 1.
Yeah. Okay. Survivor would not be happy if a contestant died. 0 burning camps.
Mm. Yeah. This is why Simon doesn't make as much as Katy Perry.
Yeah.
By the way, let me add one more thing for the what the judges are doing also. We are all writing down our scores before we hear the first grade, so we're not influenced by scores, which clearly Rob was not influenced there.
No. I'll take a picture of my paper after we get done.
Okay. All right, Liana, you want to give the second take, please?
All right. Moving on to the second take. Okay. Half of pre-merge boots are quits. So my Survivor hot take is that 50% of pre-merge boots are quits. Survivor doesn't want us to know how many quits there are because it would look bad on them for casting duds, and it would also take away from the momentum of the game. Don't want quits, don't recruit, and cast duds. More reason for the quits? Survivor is an excruciatingly hard game, and a lot of people immediately regret signing up by night one. Jimmy Johnson is a prime example of this.
Hmm. Okay. Is the take that most of the pre-merge boot or 50% of the pre-merge boots are sort of like engineering their own demise? Like, hey, everybody, vote me out tonight. Or is it that they just like intentionally act out so that people want them to, people are trying to get votes on them? They're not necessarily saying vote me out, but they're like purposely behaving poorly so that people vote for them.
Well, I don't know. I didn't write this hot take.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to get clarification.
Is it Coca?
I'd imagine all of them. If he's saying 50%, right, he's probably including everything you mentioned in there.
Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh.
Okay.
All right, I'm locked in.
Okay.
All right. Let me also add before we do take two. Take one was from Brent at Edmonton. And I have to say, one of my hot takes is give your real name if you're on this dumb show, especially if the winner gets to be on a podcast. Rob's not inviting Brent from Edmonton on a podcast. He's going to say, we're going to dox you and say your last name. So give us last names, people.
You're going to have to call a lot of Brett's from Edmonton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Liana.
Okay. I'm going to go with... this isn't a particularly hot take for me. I'm going to go with a 3.
3. Keev.
Yeah, my problem is I don't think he or she who gave this take believes it necessarily. It's an original take. I think if he really believed this take, then the person would have given more evidence than just saying like Jimmy Johnson's a prime example. Like, I want to hear 30 examples of people saying, you don't hear this after the fact. I feel like players would talk and say like, he, you know, she wanted to go home. He was really tired. Like, I believe that Jimmy Johnson definitely quit. There's definitely been a bunch, but 50%, you know, I like going hot, but I'm giving this a 3 also.
I'm going to join the 3 party. That's what I had as well. And to me, I do think that you could argue it if you get into like, oh, no, there was, you see, the reason why Lucy is being bossy is because she doesn't really want to be there. And that's why then she's acting out. And then ultimately, David will use the hidden immunity idol to against her. I think that there's a, you could try to do the mental gymnastics, but I mean, go through the boot list from every single season, and you would say, it would come out like people are like, yeah, that person didn't really want to be there, that person wanted to be voted out. I feel like that sort of ends up coming out in one way or another when people didn't want to be there.
Yeah, every exit interview would mention that for sure.
Yeah, so
yeah,
the number, I mean, could it be 10%? You know, maybe I'll give you 20, but no way it's 50.
Yeah, so that take was from Wes Dorn.
That would be very complicated. Especially the Lucy one. Can you imagine? You could go through this very elaborate ruse to get voted out, and you're like, oh, but secretly it's a quit. Like, if you're going to quit, you're just going to freaking quit. You're not going to bother to put in that effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Especially at the beginning, it's always 3 days, like, you know, 3 days between tribals. It's, you know, that's a long time to just sit there if you're quitting anyway.
Yeah, and Survivor, they want to have a vote out more than, you know, a quit is tough, but, you know, you know, it would be, it's rough TV to do it, but, you know, no way that number is 50%, especially when you factor in, like, I mean, just look at this past season. Sierra didn't quit, Tony didn't quit, unless you're saying, like, oh, no, Tony actually wanted to quit because that's why he was acting so crazy. You know, you'd sort of, like, try to work your way into it. That's why it's a 3 and not lower.
Yeah, but see, that's what I'm saying. Building a spy bunker is very difficult. So, yeah. Like, that's a lot of effort to put in to quit.
Yeah. I mean, Beast Mode Cowboy didn't quit. Malcolm didn't quit. You know, JT didn't quit. So, you know, unless, again, you have to try to really, like, say, no, they were actually quitting by, you know, playing badly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So, take number 3. Okay. Keith tells us in the show notes, the next 2 takes are by the same person. Read together. Okay. So the first part of this is Heroes versus Villains is bad. Heroes versus Villains is a boring mid-tier season at best. Please don't revoke my patronage. However, although the pre-merge and merge episodes of Heroes versus Villains are some of the biggest and best moments in Survivor history, I don't think it's fair to say that the post-merge after the villains take control is boring. It's a pagonging, and the only real drama is whether or not Russell will win the game. I know we have big characters, and there were still some strategic moments, but the reality is that the game from Final 9 on is straightforward and without real intrigue. So the second part of this is, also, the first 5 seasons of Survivor are the worst seasons of Survivor. It just doesn't hold up on a rewatch. It's one thing to have reverence and respect for the characters and how the game began, but the format of the show is objectively bad, and the lack of gameplay makes it incredibly boring to watch. Much like no one says that 1965 is the best NBA season or the 78 Cowboys are the best NFL team, the pre-idol, pre-swap era of Survivor is unwatchable, save for the few seasons such as Amazon Pearl Islands with unpredictable, compelling drama and strategy.
Rude.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay, so, all right, so we rank. Okay, so do I give 2 different numbers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I thought we had to combine this. Yeah. I was going to say, avoid.
No, 2 different numbers. Okay. Just trying to anywhere we can speed it up a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, it's hot. Do I let my personal bias get in the way? Because I kind of want to.
Sure. Yeah. Of
okay.
Course.
Perfect. Okay. I'm ready.
Okay.
All right. Heroes versus Villains is bad. I'm going to give that a 4, and then for the first 5. Oh, okay. I'm going to give it a 4 because, I mean, I can see where this person is coming from. So I think that it could be factually correct. I mean, you lose people like Randy and Tyson. And so that's always, you know, when I look back and things that the season could have been, like, it could have gone a really different direction and could have been really entertaining. I still think, though, that the season for me is probably, I mean, it's definitely in my top half, but it's just not that hot of a take.
What about the second part?
Oh, my goodness. This is what really, you had to put them together. All right. Okay. Then for the next one, I'm going to say, ooh, okay. I don't think that this is as hot of a take as that Survivor would be okay if somebody died, but I love the first five seasons of Survivor. So I think I'm going to give this one a 7.
Okay.
Wow.
Do you agree with it?
You love the first five seasons, but
I feel like this should be a cold take for you then, because
yeah, that should be a negative 7.
Because this is, again, this is eliciting emotional reactions for me.
Challenging your worldview.
I would be ready to cash outside this person. Mm-hmm. So if they would like that.
But do you think they're right?
So people should insult you in order to get tens, Leon. Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I want to be insulted.
Like, actually, go after her family. She'll give you a 10.
Okay.
I want to be triggered. Yeah. Just like my dad would be triggered if he found out that somebody was saying that the 1978 Cowboys were not the best NFL team. But anyway, so I don't know. I disagree. But again, I guess I can see the logic, because the thing like this is, these are so subjective, whether or not a season is bad or a season is good. And so I can see the logic of what they're trying to argue, but I fundamentally and emotionally disagree.
Okay. Keeve.
Yeah, so this is the only this season is good or bad take we have in the whole hot take off.
Okay, good.
I included it because any every season that's bad, according to like the fan rankings, quote unquote, has many people who for them it's their favorite or one of their favorite seasons. But Heroes vs. Villains generally considered the best or second best season. So the fact that it's bad, that is a hot take. He's not the first person to say it. He articulates it pretty well. My problem is it's a take that's hot and wrong, but with some basis, from some actual facts. So I give it a 4. It's not a correct take. That's why I can't give it any higher of a score. As far as the first five seasons are bad, obviously, if you haven't guessed already, these takes are both from Mario Lanza. I'm just kidding. The first five seasons are bad. To me, this take, first of all, they're kissing up to Rob. Because why not just say, like, the first seven seasons are bad, or first nine? You're like, what changed about the sixth season? Janet Koth, or whatever her last name is? Like, what... Where exactly did you really saved the show, Rob? I have to say,
okay.
At least to this person. So I give this a 2 because it's not right. Okay. It's incorrect.
As for the first part, Heroes versus Villains is a boring mid-tier season at best. I give this 0 burning camps. It's just it's 100% inaccurate. There's no way to prove that it is a like it's. If you want to say it's not the best season, it's just almost every episode stands up on a rewatch. I rewatched it just 2 years ago. I enjoyed myself the whole time. The characters are there and the gameplay is there. To say that from the final 9 on, it gets really boring. Well, the way that the season is structured, there's only 3 episodes after the final 9. And in those 3 episodes that we're talking about, from the final 9 on, you get the double boot with Candace and Danielle. And if you
don't, you have
to say,
the fight, the insane fight in that like weird lodge, isn't that
right,
the final 9?
Right. That, even if you were going to argue, from the final 9 on, that's a boring season. Well, at the final 7, you have the point where Russell gets Jerry to flip at Tribal Council against Danielle and Parvati, and Danielle gets voted out. Russell, there's some flirtation. Is he going to vote with Rupert and Colby? And so there's a lot of fun stuff. I mean, the Sandra stuff with Russell, I don't know about that. This is a terrible take in terms of this being a bad season. And to say it's a, middle of the pack. I mean, you have 10 seasons that are better than this, to say it's in the middle tier. So stop it with that. I'll give it a 0. And then if you can't even argue that it would be true, it's hot, but it's not correct. And then in terms of the first 5 seasons are bad, I'll give it a 5. I think that it's provocative, but I think that this has been articulated almost by anybody who's gone back and rewatched it, or if you have heard, I got my friend to start watching Survivor. He tried to watch the first seasons and they're really boring. So I think that they are slow. Even I, who had such a reference for the show, there are many parts of like the second half of Australia is unwatchable after the merge. I will say, unwatchable is strong words, but it's very, very slow.
Yeah.
And I'll give it a 5.
I'm curious to know what seasons this person actually likes.
Yeah. You send us your rankings, and that would be John Densford, the only person to have two takes. John Densford's
gosh,
the Denny. Only person. He's the only guy who had two takes on the show. We got hundreds and hundreds of takes. We only picked 20-something takes.
$10.
And this guy made it, he's the winner. He got 2 on. Nobody else got 2 on.
Okay.
Just watch. If you had a take here, then you did something season. Right.
All right. Okay. Okay. Back to you, Keeve. Next take.
Okay, take number five. Everyone has read the stories from Borneo that Mark Burnett talked the Tagi people into voting out Stacey over Rudy so that all the old people wouldn't be voted out first. I'm pretty familiar with game show law. By the way, that's a hotter take than anything he's saying here. Like, is it? I guess we're narrowing it down who it is to a game show lawyer. After the 70s game show scandals, I guess he's talking about quiz show. I thought that's 60s, whatever. And while I don't know this to be the case, I believe that Survivor producers would have gotten a talking to from network standards. They wouldn't have been able to do it again. I believe, this person says, that all the challenges and all the twists are written out in advance of the season before they can see how the season's going. And anytime something unforeseen happens, like a quit or a medevac, the decision about how to recover from it has to be made by a producer that's blind to the current characters. Sorry for laughing. And game state so that they don't choose a resolution that purposely favors one survivor over the other. Is this hot? Certainly a lot of people think Survivor's rigged one way or the other. And even on know-it-alls, Robin Steven, spelled wrong, often assume that many dispute resolutions like Stolen Idols are decided on the spot based on what would make the best TV as opposed to an actual rule set. So, I mean, this guy's take, Survivor is 0% rigged.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Two.
Okay.
It was bad that I laughed during it. You know, Rob wanted a couple William Hung takes, maybe, and maybe this counts as a Hung take.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not super familiar with game show law. If that is that a title?
Well, why don't you get back
law?
To us, Liana? Go to game show law school and then come back to us.
Yeah, right. I think that's next door to the pawn shop and the liquor store.
Rob, you're going to have who are the RGP lawyers? Like Antonio, Melissa from the LFC? Like, mm-hmm. We need a whole game show law podcast to really get to the bottom of this, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's hot.
I also gave it a 2. When I saw it, it was interesting. The truth is, it is a hot take in the sense that most fans think the show is, I don't want to say fixed, but the producer is, you know, nobody thinks what this person's saying. My problem is, the person doesn't believe it. Similar to the West take from before. I'm not buying that you actually believe it. You're just writing in a fun take that you thought of. So 2 for me, 2 for Liana. What say you, Rob?
Right. I'll join the 2 party here with this. I don't know if there is somebody who is like, this is sort of like a straw man. I don't know if anybody's saying like, Survivor is fixed. They know the outcome ahead of time and they ultimately, you know, it's professional wrestling and we're going to go through that. I also don't want to say like the take, I think it's probably not correct in that, you know, I think that's a little Pollyanna to say, no, every single thing that ever happened was all preordained before the whole season started. In Survivor Palau, they knew there was going to be no merge that season. They were just going to let the tribes fight it out for, you know, that everything that happened was all preordained. You know, I do believe, you know, in television production, you do sort of like leave yourself a bit of wiggle room to decide. You know, what you want to do to ultimately make the best show. I wouldn't call that fixing, but I would call it, you know, producing the show. So I'll give this take a 2.
Okay, so that's 5 down. And if you're keeping score at home, you're a dork. But if you're keeping score at home, Brent from Edmonton, who got a 0 from Rob, is in first place.
Okay.
Okay, all right. So moving on, or the next two I'm going to read together. These are about challenges. So the first hot take is, if I never see another reward or immunity challenge, my life would be as fine as Jeff Probst without Hunapu's Flint. Challenges are entirely for casuals, 10-year-olds, and Rupert fans. I seriously buy ice cream at the grocery store only so I'll have something to get from the kitchen on Wednesdays at about 8:10 and 8:35. So, okay, so that's the first one, that challenges are bad and are only for casuals, 10-year-olds, and Rupert fans. The next one is the strategic action on the beach is so complicated and we see so little of it. The drama we watch on TV is essentially fiction that editors have picked to mislead and confuse us. We see a result every week, but we can never be sure if what we watched is in any way related to what led to that result in the actual game. But yet, there is another part of the show with real drama. We get to see from start to finish, and at the end, we know exactly why and how the particular players both won and lost. The challenges. Maybe they aren't as strategically interesting as the rest of the show, but damn it, they are real and true. And those are both in all caps. Doesn't that count for something?
Okay.
No, so challenges are bad and challenges are good.
Okay.
Challenges are bad or challenges are good.
Can I ask a question about the first part of the hot take, challenges are bad?
Mm-hmm.
How is immunity decided in this? Are we talking about, are we just saying the challenges are bad or that challenges should be removed is the take?
I think we remove all reward or immunity challenges.
Well, how do we?
Well, your suggestion,
counsel?
You've well, said no at times, right?
Flip a coin.
What do you say? You want to go? Rob said it right that he has the coin toss, right? He's mentioned that before.
Okay.
So that's how immunity is won between the two tribes or three tribes?
Flip a coin.
Okay.
Three-sided coin.
Find a three-sided coin.
Okay.
Okay. Do I have to give mine first every time? This is a lot of pressure.
Yes.
Okay, let's see.
We all wrote them down, right? We all wrote them down, so you're just saying yours first.
Well, I'm thinking. I take this very seriously.
No, you should.
Okay. I'm going to go with...
There's a lot at stake, by the way. Rob gave out mine and your slot to the person who wins here, so... It's a lot of stakes.
That's very true. Well, never mind. Everybody's getting zeros. All right. I'm going to go for challenges are bad. I think I'm going to say I actually would be okay with removing challenges. So I don't think that any of these are particularly hot. I feel like there's always people who are like, oh, I hate the challenges, or, oh, I love the challenges. Those are the best. So I think, which one would I rate more? I think I'm going to go with I'm going to go with a 4 for both.
4 for both.
Yeah.
Or for both.
Okay.
My problem with the challenges are bad is that the person who wrote this in did not suggest, like you asked,
right.
did not give us, like, even if he said, you know, Rob always talks about a coin flip, that's a good idea. He didn't give us a reason. He's complaining about challenges, but doesn't have, like, are you changing the show? Like, is this becoming Big Brother now? How are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
Are we putting people on the block every week? Like, so to me, it's an interesting idea, and I've said this every time I'm on the voicemails, that, like, I don't always watch the reward challenge with, like, you know, I got 1.5 eyes on my phone during a lot of boring reward challenges.
Right.
Especially pre-merge. Post-merge, sometimes you get an auction or you get a family visit and it's great. But why do I care who eats a slice of pizza at this point? You don't feel the player's hunger 34 seasons in.
Yeah.
So I give the bad a 2 and the challenges are good. It's such a hot take because I feel like most people think challenges are bad. I'll give that a 4, but I personally don't believe it.
Okay. In terms of the challenges are bad take, I will give it a 3. I mean, again, as Liana said, it's nothing we haven't heard before. My big problem with it is you can't get rid of an immunity challenge. You want to say, okay, mm-hmm. I think that Survivor should eliminate the reward challenge. I mean, for every 10 that they do, is there one that has some sort of an impact where somebody gets, maybe there's 2 out of 10 where people end up getting mad at each other or something. There's some fallout from that. I'd be totally fine with the removal of the reward challenge or just having reward and immunity challenge together lumped in like they end up doing on some occasions. And in terms of challenges are good, I'll give it 1 burning camp. I think that the conventional wisdom is that the challenges are good. I mean, the production team does an outstanding job. Usually there's an exciting moment, you know, coming down to which tribe is going to win when it's close. So I don't think that challenges are good is particularly spicy.
I think I also enjoy when people misspell things during the puzzle, so I don't think I would necessarily want to lose that.
And people write in all the time, Liana. They always say, anytime I diss challenges, there's always people say, you know, I watch with my whole family, and my kids only care about the challenges. They don't care who goes home.
We can have one.
They love watching the competitions.
Yeah. We don't need 2 in an hour.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. What if you got rid of the individual immunity at the merge?
Yeah.
Thoughts?
I mean, I'd say get rid of the reward challenge where you have, the teams.
Anytime you're picking teams and it's not even important enough to show them, right?
Yeah.
Then why do we care?
Right,
I think there's a lot of drama that comes out of the, you know, one person is going to win individual immunity, especially when it's the person that everybody wants to go home. I mean, mm-hmm. Does it pay off like only like 20-30% of the time? But when it happens, it's exciting.
Mm-hmm. All right. I like it.
Okay. Oh, that was about, let me just give the names for those last 2. Challenges are bad was Matt Price. He scored a 9. And challenges are good is our beloved Dan the Benefactor. You know it's not rigged because we would have let Dan, who's donated thousands of dollars, I was going to say to the Seinfeld podcast. Then we definitely would have rigged mm-hmm. it for him. But in the name of the Seinfeld podcast, he's donated to charity. So he got a 9 too. Sorry, Dan.
Okay. This is interesting. As Sandra's number one fanboy, it's pretty damn hot for me to suggest that Lil would have been a good winner of Pearl Islands. But think about it. She checks the box for outplay for winning 1 reward challenge with Burton and the most crucial final 3 immunity challenge. After her return to the game, she outlasted her outcast partner and voted accurately 100% of the time. And although she's often criticized for being clueless and a follower, she outwitted by navigating a variety of different alliances and what we would now call voting blocks. Maybe we should actually be giving Lil some credit for the inception of voting blocks. I'm glad Sandra won, but Lil was a strong contender too, and she would have been a solid winner.
I like this one. All right, all right. I got my number. I'm ready.
Wait, Liana, do you have a guess? There's a hint maybe to who it is, which I didn't intend to have in there, but do you know who Sandra's number one fanboy is?
Well, yeah, I got a guess.
Who's your guess?
Is it Paul?
Oh, boy. Listen to how much Liana knows. She knows who is the number one Sandra fanboy. I'm very impressed, Liana. I know that he likes Sandra, but I wouldn't have guessed that. Anyway, you are correct. This is a Paul Azelson take.
Okay, well, spoiler alert.
I should have taken that out. I should have taken out any like reference to gender or fandom, you know.
As redacted. Okay.
As redacted. Number blank fanboy.
All right, good. Well, I'm glad that I already wrote down my number. Okay, I'm giving this one an 8.
8?
Wow, yes. Highest score yet.
We're tied for worry, Paul. I wrote it down before, I swear. Okay, so I'll give my reasoning. So I actually really like this take because I think that for me, this is kind of hitting that crucial middle ground between I can see the argument, I think it goes against conventional belief, it's not so outlandish that you would immediately dismiss it, and it generates an emotional reaction from me. So it checks all the boxes. Plus, we get more Lil face.
Keith.
Yeah, to me, it's a very good take. I don't know how hot it is. I mean, yeah, Lil is generally considered a joke. I guess it's pretty hot. I guess there's a school of thought, like there's so many people could have been good winners. And there is an anti-Sandra camp that, you know, I'm sure a lot of people think that any person X is better than Sandra. But I agree. It's an original take. It was argued very well by someone who's clearly spent a lot of time thinking about this. So I'm going to say I gave this a 6, but it's a very good take.
Okay. For me, I will give this take a 7. I think that this is
a 40 for most people.
The hottest take yet in my mind. It certainly is provocative and does make you think. I mean, part of it for me is, you know, how much of a byproduct is, you know, winner edit. So we probably would have seen Lil very differently if she went on to be the winner of the season as opposed to how she was portrayed. The one big asterisk for me that makes me not get 100% behind this is Lil was voted out of the game and then came back. And while I think that if that were to happen, say, in modern era Survivor, like somehow if Ozzy would have won South Pacific, I'm not sure if people would have said, oh, Ozzy winner with an asterisk. He got voted out 3 times and he came back in. Lil only.
Yeah, people would have burned down the internet back then.
Right. I think for somebody to have lost the game and come back, I think that that always would have been a stigma for her in considering her a worthy winner. I want to get the exact words correct. Lil would have been a good winner of Pearl Islands. I think that she easily could have won. You could argue a case. In terms of the overall winner rankings, I think she'd probably be considered. I don't think I would have her higher than Sandra in my actual winner rankings from that season. So to say she'd be a good winner, I think that's a bit of a stretch. But I do like how provocative of an idea that this is. And it does make you kind of think about what she ultimately did. I think that probably if you were going to credit Lil with anything, I think that she is kind of instrumental in those first couple of votes after the merge, and she ultimately does win the final challenge. She does sort of like sell a bill of goods to Fairplay and Burton at the final 5, if I remember correctly. So I think that she could have gotten it, but would we have considered her a good winner? I don't know. I'm not so sure about that. But I love the ambitiousness of the take. So I'll give it a 7.
Well, here's the thing, though. Maybe she was super annoying on purpose to get voted back into the game, and that was all part of her strategy, but
that's
we never got to see it because she didn't get the winner's edit.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah,
she's the ultimate mastermind.
Yeah.
All right, so Paul Azelson, the great Paul Azelson, takes over first place with 21 points, way ahead of the competition. There's a few takes that I'm going to take out that I have to say, 4 people wrote in takes that were very good, but 1,000 words. And I emailed all four of them and I said, send me a shorter take. And you made the show. You just have to send a shorter take. And only one of the four sent a shorter take back. So I'm knocking the next person out because he never sent back the shorter take he was supposed to. Anyway, we're going to have a choose your own adventure right now, Rob and Liana.
Okay.
We have two Parvati takes. We're going to only read one of them. You don't know who sent them in. I'm just going to tell you the headlines. One is, you know, Parvati's bad. And then one is about Parvati's double idol in Samoa. What do you guys want to hear about? We could hear none. We could hear neither of them if you want. You want to hear neither of them? That's a hot take.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's hear the double idol move being overrated, because I think that a certain player is good or bad, I think, is not as interesting.
Okay. All right. So Rob's greatest nightmare will not come true. Tyler Kakuno will not win the hot take off because he had the Parvati's bad. Just kidding. We love you, Tyler. Tyler wrote a lot of great takes in. That was his best one, but a little long. Anyway.
You teased it. Just give us the synopsis real quick.
Okay, fine. So he said Parvati is nowhere near a top tier winner player. And to me, come on, Tyler, you know the game. Say that she's the worst winner ever. Right, Liana? Don't give me a not anywhere near top tier. Like, you want to win the competition. Anyway, he goes in to say her win is a fluke. She intends to go to Final Three. We've all heard that song and dance before, right? With Serena and Amanda. She didn't know it was Final Three. And of course, she was very lucky that Johnny Fairplay quit, or else she would have been the first boot, which has, you know, been heavily rumored. It's a good take, but maybe not the most original take.
Yeah.
But again, guys, if we do this again next year or someone does a Big Brother hot takeoff, you know, don't say things you don't believe, but give us, you know, this person's the worst ever, best ever. Don't give me they're one of the top 23 winners or they're not in the top 78.
Where he loses
me
when he says winner / player, if he wants to say that she is the worst winner or something like that, but to say she's a bad player, I mean,
a below average player is silly.
Stop with that. That's a ridiculous
claim. You can't make it to the end.
You can't make it, 100 days on the show and it's, she's a bad player.
I mean, if you played 15 times and made it 100 days,
she makes it to the final
really
three twice. All right, double idol.
All right, so Parvati's double idol play. It's the most overrated move of all time, the person says. If you break down the mechanics of that merge vote, the villains were safe no matter who she played the idols for. Danielle had immunity, the two idol recipients would be immune, and so would the person who received the hero's votes. If the heroes put their votes on the right person, it would have been a 5-5 tie, and there would have been only one villain up for the rock draw, and that person would likely be Russell, who never in a million years flip on the revote. With four of them eligible to draw rocks, the heroes wouldn't think twice about flipping on JT on the revote. Some people, like Amanda and Kenz, would probably gladly vote him out, so she gets all the credit for seeing through Amanda, which was nice, but it didn't really matter. This move has been lauded by Josh Wigler, among many others, as the greatest strategic play ever, and I believe its greatness has been exaggerated in an attempt to rewrite history, stemming from a deep-seated anti-Russell bias in the online community, and this is exactly the kind of dangerous and flawed, with many A's and W's, groupthink that we need to deconstruct objectively.
Okay.
Flawed.
It's a lot to chew on.
Sorry, I had to do it. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I am going to give this one the most overrated move of all time. I like that they went to the wall with this one and really said the most overrated move of all time.
I believe the move is also in the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Right. Yeah,
wait, move is in the Hall of Fame?
I believe it was the 2014 class of the
Hall. Oh, right. One time they didn't give
players
in.
Right.
That's right. That's weird. Can you imagine if random objects were Survivor Hall of, were Baseball Hall of Famers?
Yeah. Well, there are objects in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
No, but they're not inducted. Like, they don't have a plaque like her move does. Like, can you imagine
plays?
A double, some guy hit one game?
Specific plays in the Baseball Hall of
specific
Fame?
Specific plays or concepts that that would be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's kind of insane. I feel like players only. Let's not break the object barrier into the Hall of Fame.
All right, I think I'm gonna go with is JT's letter in the Survivor Hall of Fame?
No, Russell put it on eBay.
Ugh, it's underrated. All right, I'm gonna go with a six on. No, I'm gonna go with a seven.
Seven.
Yeah.
Wow, high score.
Mm-hmm. I also like this one. I think that there are so many moves, and yes, as a Suri fangirl, there are so many moves that I think are, you know, maybe appropriately rated, but then to see something like this, it is so flashy and it is very extravagant, and I like it for that reason. But I like their argument about the strategic play. Like, is this the greatest strategic play ever? And so I think that's why, again, this is kind of a little bit of that emotional and still with the accuracy, so I'm going to give it a seven.
Okay.
Yeah, I give it a six. I think it's a good take, explained well by the person who we won't mention yet. I think, you know, to me, it's like it's been debated so many times that the opposing position or the, you know, his counter take here, he's not the first person to say it, obviously, but he still argued it well, and I think he did a good job. So I give him a six.
Okay, I believe that the take is bold. I'm not sure if it's accurate here. I mean, I think that a lot of this goes into the way that the episode is structured, and you see Amanda trying to get Parvati to play an idol on herself. Parvati is able to deduce Amanda is lying to her based on her past playing experience. She got an idol from Russell, who, again, she had an idol that was hidden. She ends up, and it's the person saying that, okay, and she wasted these idols. That's part of the reason why it's overrated. But to me, Parvati gets to the final three. It is probably, you know, one of the biggest things that people could argue about why Parvati should win that season. So I think the take is bold. I love how hot it is, but I don't know about the accuracy of the claim. So I give it a six.
See, Rob, nice. This is the kind of dangerous and flawed groupthink that we're trying to deconstruct objectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, what's the group think?
The fact that we're so ingrained to think that this is such a great strategic move, where if you look and deconstruct it, maybe it's not such a great strategic move.
Yeah, I still think it is. It's the first time that one person ends up playing idols on two people. She's able to just, okay, so Danielle has immunity. I know they're not going to put the votes on Russell. I know they're not going to put the votes on me. So there's only two possible people that they could put the votes on. She guesses right with Jerry. So it worked out in her favor. So I don't know necessarily why we're super down on it to say that, no, oh, Parvati should have gone to the rock draw based on the fact that we would have seen Candace and Amanda flip on JT. I don't think we know that for certain.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
So that had a 19. That second place does not take over Paul for first. And now, Rob, who's reading next? Rob, we have two takes, but we're only reading one again. Another choose your own adventure.
Okay.
Oh, man. I don't know, Rob. Which one do you want to talk about? Because I have very different opinions on whichever one you
pick.
Well,
what are they?
Either Tony is a bad player or Suri is a bad player.
You know, I'm a little bored of the Tony is a bad player takes. I feel like that we've heard that
we got 20 of those takes
this season.
Yeah.
We get it. There was a lot of stuff going on. Tony did a bad job this season. Tyler Perry idol. Yada, yada. I want to hear why somebody thinks Suri is a bad player.
Sorry, Andrew Brockman. And by the way, the last take, the second place take, Parvati's Double Idol, was by Michael Friday.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So now we're going to dive in to why this person thinks that Suri is a bad player. And I'm definitely not prejudging them at all. And I'm being very objective. Suri is more lucky than good. She has a reputation for being one of the best ever, especially after this past season, but that's simply not the case. In Panama, she greatly benefited from starting on a tribe of four. She also benefited from being on one of the most dysfunctional tribes in Survivor history. She didn't do anything to cause herself to advance to the point she did, but rather the mistakes of those around her that allowed her to sneak by. In Micronesia, she benefited from the loss of Fair Play early. Who knows how the season plays out if Fair Play is there? While she does make some decent moves that season, I don't feel like it is a certainty that she would win in a Final Three situation. It's not a runaway like people think it is. She is eliminated early in Heroes versus Villains. She benefits tremendously in Game Changers by not having to attend Tribal until the merge. She would have been voted out had she attended one of the first few Tribals. After the merge, she does nothing to help hold her alliance together, but rather lets them turn on each other, putting her in a bad position. Regardless of what her intentions were with the vote steal, it was a bad move to use it. She loses all of Sarah's trust and gets her biggest ally voted out. Suri is not in the conversation for greatest of all time. Suri is more lucky than good.
Okay.
Okay, I have my number, but I don't want to explain first. Someone else go.
Okay.
I need to calm down for a hot second.
You triggered Leon. That's been good for the hot takers.
Yeah, that usually gives you a good score, but right now she's so mad. Okay. I don't know. I don't know how this is going to play out.
Keev.
I gave this a five. To me, it's a very hot take because obviously Suri is great and everyone. I think like, you know, the game bots and the character people both can appreciate Suri's gameplay. I feel like players quake in fear of how good she is and how amazing her social game is. So the fact that she's bad is wrong, but it's a good take, argued decently well. So I give it right in the middle of five. Not bad. Not the winner.
Okay. For me, this certainly is a take that is provocative. The conventional wisdom definitely says Suri, one of the best and most celebrated players, especially coming off of Survivor Game Changers. But to examine the statement, she's more lucky than good, you could argue that bad luck has cost Suri a win in a couple of her Survivor seasons, starting with the fact that she was planning to go to the final three with Parvati and Amanda in Micronesia, and then, oh, hey, guess what, everybody? It's a final two, and she gets hosed out of being in a final three in that spot. And did we mention that at the final six of Survivor Game Changers, she's eliminated from the game without receiving a vote through nothing that she actually did? She ends up just getting eliminated. So certainly there were times where the ball bounced her way, but also times that she got an unlucky break. But to say that she's more lucky than good, I think really just diminishes a lot of what she accomplished in her Survivor career. So I think that this claim is patently false. I give it a 2 burning camps on the scale.
Wow.
Okay, here's the deal. I get that I've said that if something makes me emotional and elicits emotional reaction, that I consider that to be something indicative of a hot take. But here's the thing. I am offended by this take, and I can't help it.
I'm not even going to tell you guys who gave it. I'm so scared.
I'm emotional.
For them.
First of all, in Panama, she greatly benefited from starting a tribe before. She would have gone home first. She was clearly the weakest, and due to her amazing social game, was able to worm her way in and send Timber Tina home. Okay, so that was all on her. First episode, amazing. And she continues to play amazing. Yes, being on one of the most dysfunctional tribes in Survivor history is, first of all, hilarious, but she knows exactly how to play it. She just lays low, she works hard, she lets Shane implode around her. I think that is her being able to read the situation and play amazingly. I would continue and address every single point, but I don't want to take up any more time on this podcast. So I'm just going to go ahead. I'm going to give it a 5.
Oh.
Because I'm trying to somehow combat my own personal bias. So maybe I'm overshooting this, but I would love to have a very long Skype conversation with whoever wrote this, because I will continue to argue for hours upon hours. I have notes. I will show you why this is just so wrong.
Now, is this a Natalie Negrotti Skype conversation that they have to pay for, and like maybe someone or is this a free Skype
this
convo?
Awful take, you automatically win.
Yeah, but you gave
contest.
It a 5. That was like that you've rewarded them for getting you so angry.
Well, it might be a punishment if they like Liana.
Oh,
it's
they have to get dressed
reward,
down
if
by Liana.
They hate her. Yeah. Anyway, Lawson yeah. Campbell, give Liana your Skype name. You guys are up for a conversation. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Keith,
before we move on, okay, I think we need a little bit of a palate cleanser. Let me just take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, and those are the people over at TrueCar. And there's something that a lot of people don't know. I don't know if it's a hot take or not, but TrueCar can help you buy a used car. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. Whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through the TrueCar certified dealer network. With the network, you'll be able to see what other people paid for the car that you want, so you know what a fair price is and you can feel confident. And with TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick and easy car buying experience where you'll easily find the new or used car that you want at one of the over 13,000 dealers available with TrueCar. So when you're ready to buy that new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Okay, let's keep going with the hot takeoff. How's this going so far, Keith? Good?
I'm enjoying it. You know, had we really planned that better, I would have given you like a dreams yow car take now, but there's a lot of integrity in hot takeoffs, and I would not just let even though there was a dozen takes about that, I would not just let one in strictly for the advertisers.
Right. Dreams had plenty of confidence when he was getting that brand new car. He didn't need to call up anybody a TrueCar, but for everybody else, give it a shot. All right. This next take says every episode of Survivor should be 2 hours long with just one vote off per... Oh!
Got the X. I didn't even think... By the way, I thought this is an interesting take.
Yes. Stop it.
And it's not fair because Liana and I don't have the buzzer. So
yes.
We're just going to like shout like hyenas when we want to X.
Stop it. This is called Australian Survivor. I just saw it. It's not good.
The producer in me is happy that you exit because, you know, time for more takes. But the I will say that the take is that episode should be 2 hours long. Let me ask you a question quickly. If the show was on Netflix and time was literally no issue and you were the producer of Survivor, how long would you make every episode? Exactly what it is now, 42, 43 minutes?
I mean, just doing what we talked about, let's get rid of the reward challenge. You want to go 90 minutes. I think that's okay. But,
well, yeah,
you know, just
I think 90 minutes is right. If it was like Breaking Bad or a show that had leeway from a network to go over their 9 o'clock slot, I think Survivor would go to 9:10 every week at least.
Yeah. Don't be compelled to put more in there just because we need to fill the time slot. It should take as long as it takes, and to give them the extra time, I think that's fine. And we do see that in like some of these international versions. Like you watch the show 1 week and it's like, oh, this episode is 50 minutes and this episode is, you know, an hour and 45 minutes. But I don't think that we need, like, at some point we need to like get on with it, right?
Yeah, I like this idea, but also as someone who dedicates way too much time to watching Big Brother live feeds, that I should not be surprised that I like this.
Keeve, that a lot of these like NBC reality shows, like they do 2 hours and it's a
they're
lot
stretched out. I know. But 90 minutes, which I know it's hard to do 90 minutes because what are you putting on? A comedy at 9:30? Like, I know it's logistically you'd almost need a second 90-minute show. Network-wise, it doesn't work. If the show, again, was on Netflix or Hulu or even FX, a channel that, you know, maybe experiments more, I do think a 90-minute episode. Listen, in a 60-minute Survivor episode, other than an occasional reward challenge, there's not a boring second, in my opinion. Mm. So I think if you could add 10 more minutes and give us some old-school camp life, you know, give a, you know, you don't have to fast forward through, you know, the schoolyard pick or things like that. You could show us a few things that maybe we just don't have the time for, especially in a week where, you know, there's a revote and tribal starts at like 8:44 and everyone, you know, there's just not a lot to show. Anyway, so that's the X. Sorry, Scott, from Mason, Michigan, but not really sorry, because, again, we hate the anonymity. No offense to like intern Amy and people like that. But I want real names. So no doxing for Scott from Mason, Michigan, but he gets a zero. Okay.
Keeve, you're up.
Yes. Okay, next take, one more take from a person who did not give their full real name. My hot take is that Ozzie Lust is the best player to never... Not giving it to you,
oh,
sorry.
Oh, yeah, the buzz.
Oh, my.
Xing my own. It's too long. Jeff from Illinois, you didn't email me back with the shorter take. So, you know, time is up.
Yes, okay,
here.
with the hot take, Ozzie is the best to never win. I think, you know, you could argue a case for that. I think that...
by the way, it's a good take. I'm teasing Jeff from Illinois. Like, it actually is a good take. He did a very good job of arguing it. It's just a little long. And, you know, honestly, when we did the hot takeoff, and when people tweet, which is essentially like a lifelong hot takeoff that we're all just like trapped in... You could say it. A hot take a lot of times is one sentence. Now, you did ask for some explanation. So it's fair that people gave a whole McGill of like their takes. But to me, a lot like if I give you my takes later, like most of them are one sentence.
Yeah.
So I think you could give a great take in one sentence. You don't
but
need 700 words.
I have you on
words.
The line to be able to ask you, hey, what did you mean by that? Okay. So are you saying this? Like it's.
Even if I was emailing them in, if I was but an emailer into the hot take contest, I think I could send some one sentence takes that have some value. Okay.
All right. Liana, next take.
Okay.
And Liana, you still have your ex, remember?
Right. Okay. Good to know. I'm just excited to make the buzzer sound. So, yes. All right. So this person wrote, my hot take is that the game is flawed. Not flawed, just flawed.
Game is flawed.
According to Survivor legend, when Mark Burnett and CBS created Survivor, they didn't anticipate the problem of solid voting alliances and pagongings, which take away the fun and suspense of the show while also making strategy boring and simplistic. But it's very revealing that CBS chose not to copy Survivor's format when they designed Big Brother. Despite the massive ratings of Borneo and Australia, CBS recognized that Survivor was a flawed game due to the pagongings in both seasons. Instead, CBS gave Big Brother a new format, one designed to counteract the pagong problem. CBS couldn't make such a radical change to Survivor's format, so they embarked on an endless quest for a twist that would solve the game's design flaw. Production's effort to fix the game has only intensified over the years. Today, players can expect to be showered with multiple idols, tribe swaps, twists, and quote advantages of every shape and size, all for the purpose of introducing more randomness into
the
game.
I think we got this.
Okay.
Okay.
Rob is giving a mini right. X yeah. to the rest
yeah,
of
that was the other, I'm, okay.
And by the way, that doesn't help your take. If you're getting, if half of your take is getting X, then, mm-hmm. you know, you could have okay. cleaned it up a little bit.
All right.
Right. Okay.
We got the point.
We got the point that the object of the game of Survivor is bad.
Right. Okay. Right. That the strategy is flawed. Okay.
Why are you listening to a, you know, a podcast in the off season about a show that you hate?
Right.
Think it's flawed.
They go on to say that you know, Survivor's trying to get people to make big moves. They're like brainwashed cult members. Big moves, big moves, gotta make big moves. The game is flawed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think, Rihanna?
Right. I'm giving this one an 8. I like this one.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Rob, maybe you should have read the whole thing so she could hear it again.
Yeah.
Well, this is actually similar to something that I've been thinking. So I am also a Big Brother fan, so I'm a little biased, but mm-hmm. I think that the strategy of Big Brother is so much more interesting and yes. or could be much more interesting. And I think that I understand the fundamental structure and organization of Survivor, but oh man, if you could change it up and make it like Big Brother, how exciting would that be? Maybe I just yeah. want two Big Brothers.
Okay.
You want Big Brother on an island and Survivor in a house.
Right, exactly.
Heave.
We have four shows here. An 8 for Leon. I gave this a 2. To me, to me, it could have been explained a little bit more concisely. It's an interesting point, but people have said it before. I do think it's kind of correct. I think, you know, Colin Stone has argued this many times. The game of Big Brother is strategically a much more complicated and interesting game. Like, at face value, even though I much vastly prefer the show Survivor to Big Brother, the actual structure of the game is super interesting on Big Brother. And Survivor, it sort of has been solved. But maybe that could have been said a little better. I give it a 2.
I give this take a 0.
Wow.
Again.
Rob.
Listen, hear me out.
Paying the bills
the
for Rob.
The take exactly. is yeah. flawed, okay? The yeah. take says it's very revealing that CBS chose not to copy Survivor's format when they designed Big Brother. 1, CBS did not design Big Brother. It's an international format that they purchased the rights to do in America.
All right, nitpicky McGee over here.
2, listen to this.
Yes.
The first Big Brother was a flop. America voted for right. people. They abandoned yes. that format and went with a more yeah. Survivor-style format in the second season mm-hmm. of Big Brother, which is they improved on Survivor, but they did not then take on the Survivor format and say, oh, this is, don't use this. This is terrible. They said, okay, let's take this and let's tweak it a little bit. So to say that the idea of, you know, voting in Survivor – I get where you're coming from, but to me, this take is garbage. 0 burning camps.
So that's 10 points. John Connor, your take has been terminated.
Sorry.
But there's so many. Okay, but how do you explain CBS shoving all of these tribe swaps and twists and advantages into the game? Right? I mean, clearly they think that there's some type of lackluster strategy,
second,
right?
If the Big Brother format is so superior to the Survivor format, then why are there so many twists on Big Brother?
Okay, first of all, the Let's Get Ready for a Takeover was brilliant. Thank you very much. Everyone remembers the Gronk cruise. Mm-hmm.
I'm still on the Gronk cruise.
Right, aren't we all? Okay, well, you know what, Rob? I give you a 0.
Oh, well, that's not very nice.
Oh, jeez. Are you using your X on Rob as a taker, Liana? You're Xing out Rob?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So just to update, Paul Azelson's Lil would have been a good winner at 21 is in first place. Michael Friday's Parvati's Double Idol is overrated take is in second place with 19. We still have a bunch of takes to go. Who's next?
Okay. Hot take. Colton Cumby should come back and play Survivor for a third time. Here's why. Colton showed promise as a Survivor strategist and character in his first season, but as a 20-year-old, he was regrettably immature and made a number of insensitive comments. With Blood vs. Water only 2 years later, he probably could have benefited from some time and some additional life experience and more emotional fortitude and independence that comes with age. I'd love to see a more mature version of Colton come back to Survivor as the fun kind of villain, someone who can convince his tribe to go to forfeit immunity and give caddy confessionals that stay on the right side of the line. He's a super fan of the show and has a unique perspective given his background. Bring him back at 30. I think you'd see a great character, possibly even a great player.
Mm.
Ooh, yeah. All right. I'm... Colton. You know what? I would just give this one a 2. I would not be interested to see Colton come back. I mean, I get the argument for having somebody that's matured and, you know, has more time to really think, but I don't know. I think I've seen enough of Colton and I would not be excited to see him back.
You know, I kind of agree with this person's take. I don't think it's that hot. I think any two-time player, it's reasonable to say they should come again. I know that Colton would be on the bottom of many people's lists. Maybe like with Franny is like, okay, we've seen it. What more is there to the game? But I do think, I don't even think we're ready for it yet. And again, Colton, I believe, is still very young. So, you know, give him 5-10 years. If he realizes there are his ways, then I have no problem. Ultimately, I know this as a person who would never want to play Survivor. I would like to play Survivor in a house, like Big Brother. It's not for everybody, and it's just not for him. He's a great Survivor fan who shouldn't be playing. But I think it's an original take that made me think a little bit, so I give it a 6. Okay.
To me, it's interesting. After Survivor Blood versus Water, I would say, I think we're good here. We don't need to see Colton come back. Of course, then, you know, sometime after that season, there was the tragic death of Caleb. Did that change him in some way? Is he a different person? That's what I don't know. I really have not kept in touch with him. I have no idea what he would be like on a third time. I think it's provocative, where it's sort of like Jeff has really come down hard on Colton, that you'll never play again, you quit.
It would be a hard sell for Jeff.
It'd be a hard sell for Jeff, but if like they felt like that he was a different guy now, and like he sort of like grew up because of, you know, actual like the passage of time, and also because of this.
Well, let me ask you something,
through.
Rob. Yeah. What if Jeff said, you can come back, you need to give me a down payment. Give me like $200,000, you'll get it back if you don't quit.
Again, I think we get into like, okay, well, what is a pre-merge boot a quit? So I think we sort of get into.
Listen, I mean, we got to ask Wes Dorn. We got to get him on the
right,
phone.
Right. Anyway, so look, if Survivor wanted to do it, I think they could do worse in terms of bringing a person back.
Mm-hmm. They could so put him on Big Brother.
I give it a 5.
Not
I give
for
it a 5.
Yeah, I think he'd be a good, you know, he might enjoy that. I don't know if he likes the show Big Brother, but that'd be good. So that's a 13 for the great Amanda Rabinowitz. Okay. Still 21 is the lead.
Okay. All right. Keeve.
All right. Next take. Here's my hot take. On her way to winning Game Changers, Sarah didn't learn anything from her loss in Kageyan. She wasn't a better player in her second game. Sarah said she was coming to Game Changers and playing like...
Why'd you buzz, Liana?
Liana
buzzes.
I'm talking
about Sarah. I'm over it.
Yeah.
You're over it.
I figured it would be fair to put... It would be silly if we didn't have one... you know, take of the season that literally just ended. But I hear you. I think if you've listened to 100 podcasts in the last few weeks, it's reasonable to buzz.
Yeah, I'm interested. Why do you say you're over it? Because you think that Sarah, you agree with the take or you disagree with the take?
Oh, I didn't even form an opinion on the take. I'm just over talking about Sarah for now. I think I have heard Sarah being talked about so much in the past like couple weeks. I need a little bit of a break. You know, take some time.
I hear.
Think about myself.
I will say this is a pretty well argued, interesting take. But I hear you that it's, you know, we just got over. It would be like if in 3 weeks I called you guys and be like, hey, let's talk about, you know, the Warriors sweeping the Cavs. You'd be like, all right, I just spent 2 weeks discussing it. Like, and now it's over. And let's talk about it.
All right. Well, I have an interview coming up with Sarah. I hope that, you know, you're not going to tune out, Liana. I'm buzzing.
Can you read her this take? Sorry, Jonathan Foreman. Why don't you send that take in to Sarah? That's a good idea. Send this take in to Sarah and see if she can rebut it. I'm sure she can.
I would.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So then... Liana, you go with this next tag.
All right. Survivor casting needs to go back to recruits and not put as many, quote, super fans on the show. My defense for this is that I think Fiji is one of, if not the most entertaining seasons ever, whereas a season like Millennials versus Gen X, which has a ton of super fans, had interesting strategy but very little entertainment value. In fact, what was arguably the most entertaining part of this season, Figtails, came from two very obviously non-superfans. We members of the Survivor online community would obviously like to think that superfans make for great TV as they represent us, and so many of us long to be on the show ourselves. But the harsh reality is that very few superfans have made good TV, whereas so many novices and obvious recruits have provided the best Survivor moments.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet. I like this one. I'm going to give this one a... 6, because I like the argument. I think it's true, but I don't think that it's a super hot take, in my opinion. And maybe it's just because I kind of agree with it.
Okay. Keeve.
I also gave it a 6, Liana. To me, it's not the hottest thing ever. It's more correct than hot, but I do think, you know, in, you know, of the superfan community, which I get, again, if you're listening to a podcast, a 2-hour podcast about Survivor Hot Takes, you are a superfan. There was 30 takes about like who are superfans and casuals and stuff like that. This is the only one I included because I thought it was the best one. You know, I agree that I don't know much about season 35, but just looking at like the pictures of the people on it, there was some nerdy looking guys. It seemed like there was like 4 Cochrans there. You know, like they're almost going overboard now. Like we saw Cochran win. We saw Steve win on Big Brother. Like there's nothing left to that arc. Right. We know what happened to the superfan. They can win. They can lose. Right. Mm. I just feel like the story's been told. So I think it's a good take. Yeah.
To me, too many superfans is just kind of vague. I think it's sort of like what is the cutoff for a superfan and what isn't? Like there's a bunch of people, like if you want to say millennials versus Gen X is bad, like where do you cut off superfan? Is Hannah a superfan? Is Brett a superfan? Adam's a super duper fan. Certainly Zeke is a superfan. Is David a superfan? So, first of all, I think Millennials versus Gen X is a good season. I mean, when you get down to the final 6 and you say, like, I think a super fan can be a character. I think that when you get to that final 6 and you have David and Hannah and Jay and Adam and Brett and I forget. Oh, and apparently Ken also. I think that's a good season. To blame it all on the super fans is a little too much. And just to say too many super fans, it's too vague. It's a little provocative because I think that for years we heard like the problem with casting is that they didn't put me on the show. They need more super
fans.
Too
many Mactors.
There's too many Mactors. And then you say that they overcorrected after Survivor One World. And now there's too many super fans. So I give it a 4. It's a little provocative, but I think that overall the take is kind of vague.
Okay.
So what about super duper fans?
No, way
too
many.
Are there too many super duper fans?
Well, let's tie that into the next take. Okay. Shall we?
All right. Mm-hmm.
RHAP is ruining the Survivor fan base because people treat Rob's word as definitive, suppressing diversity of viewpoints. The combination of RHAP and the proliferation of social media discussion about RHAP have homogenized the views of the fan base. Rob, as a formal player, has become a thought leader in the Survivor community, but because of people's reverence for him, that's turned into adopting his view as a definitive view. For example, after a season where the conversation was about how Tony was a lunatic and who was terrible at Survivor, Rob, after the season, called Tony one of the best ever, and you saw a marked shift in the conversation. We've also seen a shift in how Sophie is viewed after Rob vocalized his change in perception of her. Originally saying that Coach was robbed, to now giving her all sorts of credit for her win. You see this on many issues, best players, best seasons. Where Rob speaks, people follow. The result of this, however, is a lower diversity of viewpoints, in a large part because people are not looking at Rob's biases, even though he himself makes clear that he has a certain viewpoint on the game and the show. While Rob isn't responsible for this, the groupthink among his diehard listeners, which is a large part of the Internet Survivor fan base, has emerged to change the contours of the conversation around the TV show. And it's also caused a shift in how players who are tapped into that community view the game. Well said. Well said.
Well, first of all, this gives you way too much credit.
By the way, I want to give props to Rob for reading that.
But, right. It is the most hilarious way.
I feel like a lot of people would not have read that take.
No.
So props to Rob for reading that.
Okay. So first of all, I mean, I think that no matter what happens, you're going to have some type of group think when you get a bunch of people together. But there's so much more. How many people watch Survivor, right? Like what, 13 million or something like that? 6 million? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Right.
How many people watch Survivor? Whatever.
About
there's a ridiculous number of people that still watch Survivor. Mm-hmm. So to say that RHAP, I mean, what percentage of the fan base is RHAP people?
Probably less than 1, right, Rob?
Yeah. I mean, if 9 million people.
And that's Americans. Remember, half of your fans aren't even Americans. So it's probably more than 9 million people watching. That's just like Nielsen.
Yeah. So if 9 million people are watching the show, 1% of the audience listening to this podcast on a good week.
Yeah, but definitely not 2 or 3, probably. I mean, that, you know,
right.
You live in a nicer house.
Right, yeah.
Right. So I don't, you know, I mean, we are the one percenters, but I don't think that the RHAP has that much of an effect. And I, this didn't elicit an emotional reaction from me. I'm going to give this one a 3.
For me. Yeah. Wow. Okay. 3.
No. Did it?
Keith.
You know, I think that the writer has a lot of good points. I commend them for going up and even giving this take in, because I'm sure it's somebody who likes Rob a lot, who you know, listens to the podcast. And to me, it's just you're assigning Rob too much credit in a way. It's like Rob has takes. Rob is just Rob was on the show, and yes, Rob has the loudest platform. But Rob is just another super fan. And if he thinks something, it's probably just because like that's the way people like Rob. And there's many thousands of listeners who have similar opinions to Rob, and we listen to the show because we have similar opinions. You're just like the person with the, you know, with the loud, you know, sort of like the loudest voice, but you're not making like, I don't like Tony because you like Tony, even though I listen to your podcast, you know, a lot of times you like a player and I could care less about them and vice versa. So to me, it's a good point argued very eloquently. I do give it a 7, but I don't totally agree with it.
I think this is a 10. I think they hit the ball. But no, so just to speak to some of the points here, I mean, what's the season that I ruined? Which is the season that was ruined because of me?
Yeah. And what about for the 99, as you said, or 98% of Survivor fans who don't even, you know.
Well, it's not so much for the fans. I think it's the it's the players they're talking about here. So it's because of me, I'm ruining Survivor. I'll take credit for Cambodia, okay? Steven is there.
Yeah, do you get the good seasons?
I'll take...
Blood versus Water, that's probably the most RHAP-friendly season.
Yeah, I'll take credit for... If Cambodia was bad, that's on me, okay? But in terms of the other stuff, I mean, I think that part of the reason that people, you know, thought Tony was a crazy player and then change their opinion, I kind of feel like that's because he won.
Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of, I think that has a kind of a lot to do with it. In terms of I was pro coach and then I became pro Sophie, I'd have to go back and listen to what I said at the time. I don't know if I was ever firmly in the coach got robbed camp, but you know, that sometimes that there's a Mandela effect that happens in my own
brain.
And
also, they didn't really show us what Sophie was doing, so you only figured that out after.
Right.
Right.
Right. But I think that part of the reason why I think Sophie's a good player is, you know, I talk to Sophie a lot and she has a lot of really smart things to talk about. I've heard Coach talk on a podcast and I like what Sophie has to say. In terms
it was
of
on 4.5 speed, Coach.
Yeah. And so I think that I'm sort of an easy scapegoat in terms of what's wrong with Survivor in certain people's minds. So I'll give it a 3. It's certainly provocative. I think it could certainly start a conversation. But I have to say, if I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing and wake up and look at
myself,
it would
be weird if this one won, right?
I can't
if you gave
say
it a 10 in this.
That I've ruined Survivor. In an alternate reality where there is no RHAP, but there's still Survivor, I don't know necessarily. Is Survivor in this alternate universe enjoying some sort of renaissance in the alternate 2% world of no RHAP?
Actually, that version of Survivor is doing a lot better, Rob. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, look, then that's the case.
How come Rob's spinning off so many podcasts? And how come there's so many Survivor podcasts now if RHAP is ruining Survivor? I see on Twitter all day other podcasts people say.
Yeah.
Ruining.
Maybe that's what's ruining Survivor. Right, Keith. That's a good point.
All right, Brian podcasts. G, thanks for your effort. Appreciate you writing in.
Yes, but I would like to look, if Survivor does ultimately go off the air, if the epithet is Rob Sesternino did this, then that's fine. I'll be fine with that. If that's ultimately that he came, he saw, he ruined Survivor forever. That's me.
Okay. Well, and especially considering if you make this your livelihood and then you kill the thing that, you know, gave you your livelihood.
Yeah, it'd be like a Greek tragedy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Oh, there you go. We'll write a play about it. That's how you can continue making money.
Yeah, that's how, and then we'll sell the play. That's a good idea.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Just two more takes left of the regular round.
Okay.
So the take is Mike Scoopin is and always will be the single most impactful player in dictating Survivor history.
Hmm.
The person continues, if Scoopin doesn't fall in the fire, Very realistically, Cooch has the numbers at the merge, and the entire Survivor space continuum is disrupted because of who would be invited back for subsequent seasons. There's an overall possibility, by the way, I have a hot take similar to this. If there is an overall possibility of 9 seasons most likely having different winners, and the way those seasons and the games played out impacting the remaining seasons and the legacy of the show, whether he meant to or not, because of that, well, he didn't mean to. He didn't mean to burn himself. I don't know what that means.
Hey,
anyway.
You don't know what he's up to. He's capable unthinkable things.
This is different than trying to argue players. Okay, we're good here. It's an interesting take. This is a butterfly. This is essentially like a butterfly effect thing. You could argue this about any decision in History of Survivor, right?
Yeah. Well, especially for Scoopin'. And what this person is writing is that, so then the whole second half of Survivor Australia is different. You know, who goes on to win that season? Ultimately, it's a complete, it's definitely not going to be one of like Tina, Keith, or Colby. Everything changes, and potentially Amber is maybe does she come back for the All Stars? Does Alicia come back for the All Stars? Is Scoopin' back on the All Stars? So a lot of food for thought here.
This is the Survivor Space Continuum disruption where RHAP doesn't exist, and Survivor's still doing quite well.
Yes.
Yeah, this could be MHAP. This could be Mike has a podcast. Who knows? What Scoopin'
is. Yeah. That's one hell of a Patreon there. All right.
Okay. I think if I had to give this one a score, I like how bold it is that deciding that a particular player is and always will be the most single most impactful player on Survivor. This for me is kind of a close but no cigaragua because I don't really like the choice of Mike Scoopin. And it's wrong.
Yeah.
So
it's a hot take just to include him, right?
The boldness of it. So I'm going to go with a 5.
I gave it a 6. By the way, one more person I forgot to mention. The Too Many Superfans take was by the great Martha Krebel. This take, I give a 6. You just give it a 5, right? I give it a 6.
Mm-hmm.
It's hot just including Scoopin' as like a normal person, as like just the Survivor player here. You're trying to, have some flames here. It's a good take. Right. No pun intended. It's a good take, but you could literally, people writing in saying, what if 9/11 didn't happen? And then season 4 is in Jordan. Boston Rob wins. Then on the All-Stars,
why would Boston Rob win if it was in a different location?
Well, maybe he's the best player. He wins the season. Now on All-Stars, he gets voted out first instead of you. Then you go to the finals with Amber. You marry Amber. You have like 8 kids now. I mean, the butterfly effect works for everything.
Not for that. I don't think so.
No, that's trajectory. Okay. That's a hot take. Someone
that is a very hot take. Okay. So, to me, I think that this is the most clickbaity headline that there is, I think, that we've covered so far. Maybe more so than RHAP is ruining Survivor. I think I agree with the sentiment. I think that really it is fascinating to sort of go down that rabbit hole and see what changes. I mean, how many people have come back from Survivor the Australian Outback? A lot.
7 or 8, right?
A lot. But 7 or 8. Yeah. And so it is very impactful to a number of seasons. I think this one, I give it an 8.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good take. I'm keeping my score, but I agree. This is definitely one of the better takes, worthy of winning, even though it's just tied for second place. Great job, Megan Zimianski.
Okay, because to me, it's something where that you would have, like, if you said, oh, Mike Scoopin's the most impactful person in Survivor history.
Right, that would have gotten X.
People say, what? And then you explain it. I'm like, oh, okay, I could see that.
What? See, I would click on it, but then when I would read it, I'd be like, nah.
But you clicked
on it. A lot of eye rolls.
But you clicked on it.
I did click. They get that internet traffic from me.
Click, yeah.
Click.
Click, 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 click. Nice.
She's a little devil, that one.
Yeah.
All right. One take left. Right now, we got Paul Azelson in the hot seat at 21. Can this take beat Paul Azelson's take for the championship?
Okay, the best player always wins. Always is in bold and all caps.
Well, that changes everything.
I know. Well, it's very different when you read it that way. Okay. Here's the thing. I've heard this one a lot. And so because I think I've seen it so many times, I don't get that, let me read more. So I am going to give this one The best player always wins. Yeah, this one's getting a two.
Two.
Okay. Yeah, is the person being serious also, Liana? I'm not sure.
It's, I don't know, but they did put it in bold and all caps. It's in bold and all caps. I mean, that's pretty serious.
That's true. You have to be telling the truth.
It doesn't elicit the emotional reaction, and I don't think that it's accurate, and meh, I'm over it.
I mean, if this person agrees, I even though I'm advocating for a lot of one-sentence takes, and this is the only one-sentence take that really made the list here, I think here you got to explain. Like, if you could sort of make a cogent explanation, I'd give you a higher score. I'm giving this a three.
Yeah, I feel like that we've heard this a lot. It's sort of like in the comments section of any sort of debate about who should have won a season. So to me, it's not that spicy. I give it a two.
Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. that's last place. That's seven. But listen, that was a kind of a joke take we threw in there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I say when anything gets like down. But I was like, oh, it was a joke. That was a joke. Yeah. It was a joke. Yeah.
That was a parody.
I was kidding.
I was kidding.
Rob, do you want to go into some quick rapid fire takes?
Of course I do.
All right. Nick Johnson, Survivor Fiji doesn't suck, a top half season. Liana, this is what we're talking about. Say it's number one. We might have read it. A top half season?
Top half that's, season.
I mean,
top half. Especially it's the because 17th it could best be season. Right there. Yeah. It could just cross the line.
Yeah.
A similar Mason Markscores. Hot take, Susie Smith should have won Gabon, and she would be a top 15 winner.
Top 15.
I would say, like, Susie Smith should have won Gabon, and if so, she would become an astronaut and, like, literally flown to the moon.
Right.
Give me something better than that.
Right.
Adam from Indy, when people think of Survivor contestants who got further in the game by using their sex appeal, they often think of Parvati or Sarah Jones, one of the many beautiful beauty pageant contestants. But my hot take is that Eddie Fox is the contestant who goes the furthest using his sex appeal.
That's hot.
He forms
that's
a relationship with Hope early. Not so hot, right?
Well, I mean, okay. If they can back it up, but I don't know. Not buying it.
I think that's what Philip was going for, too, with his pink underwear.
Yes.
Liana, I mean, someone, Zach Brooks wrote in, he tweeted, actually, and he said, let's play a drinking game during the Survivor Hot Takeoff, and let's drink every single time Aubrey or Michelle or Sandra is mentioned. And I got to say, Zach Brooks, you're very sober right now, because mm-hmm. we did not mention them at
I'm
all.
I'm sorry.
But so we don't need the best Michelle take was probably from Krista McGinnis. But, you know, we've heard, I think the problem with stuff like that is we've heard both sides of arguments like Michelle and Aubrey, like Sandra and Russell a billion times. Literally, you follow certain people on Twitter and you see it every day, these arguments breaking out.
Mm-hmm.
So you want a Colin Stone take.
Yes.
Colin Stone, probably the most noted hot taker. You know, in the Survivor community.
Fire up the hot
I said,
stone.
Colin Stone. Yes, I said, Colin, he hadn't given a take today. I said, Colin, we can't even do the hot takeoff. There's no Survivor hot takeoff without a Colin Stone take. Here we got. We got one. Switching back to a final two would make for a much, much in all caps, more strategically interesting new school game if the players knew up front. Final three equals trash. Now, it's not such a hot take, but I just like, use the word trash in your takes, right, Liana?
Yeah, what do you get an extra point if you call someone?
No, you do
say,
get an extra point.
This is the best, or this is trash.
Yeah, give me some real superlatives and actual like adjectives in there.
Yeah, right. More curse words, the better.
Yeah, nobody's cursing.
I want a final two. I don't like this final three. I agree.
To me, I like the thought of it. I don't know if we have that proven out where Survivor Kagyan is a final two. And we had our players find out about it like late in the game. So it wasn't like that they could plan for it. Same thing with Micronesia. Unless you're saying that, and that's why Token Sheens are so great, because they knew it was going to be a final two in that season. And I'm not 100% sure that they did. So I just don't know if you could back that up in terms of most of the final two seasons, I would say, are not overly strategic, especially when we're talking about ones where they know it's going to, like, if you're going to talk about the first 12 seasons, but again, that's a little bit of a false comparison because a lot of the strategy has not been invented. I'd love to see it play out. I mean, I think that would be a fun twist to try. I don't know necessarily if it guarantees a more strategically cutthroat season. And I'm also not sure necessarily if that's what, based on a lot of the takes that we got, if what people are dying for, a more strategically cutthroat season.
Yeah, it seems like there's a backlash to the strategy, right? We want less strategy, as some of the writers' inners are asking for.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Do you want a T-dub take, Rob, or are you good?
You tell me. I trust your judgment.
All right, no, it's a, all right, here's T-Dub's take. The lack of, and this is a very lawyery take, the lack of specific voting criteria for juries when deciding on Final Tribal is the biggest weakness in the Survivor game today. It means that whoever is well-liked, not who objectively played the best game, tends to get more votes. Those who would argue that the appeal of, that's the appeal of the game, how to get people to like you enough to give you $1 million after you've crushed their dreams of winning, that misses my point. If a game is being played, then challenges should matter, and outwitting someone or working harder than someone should matter. Also, the idea of a jury suggests that there is a law which is being applied. Jurors in a civil or criminal case, he's a humble brag, he's a lawyer, are not asked to vote based on whether they like or dislike the person. Don't call it a jury if it's just going to be a popularity contest.
So is this part of the game show law that we're talking T-Dub about on that podcast?
Maybe that's T. Who was the guy before? Maybe that is who T-Dub is, the game show lawyer.
Right. Keeve, is the take that we shouldn't call the jury a jury?
Well, it seemed like he went off to a second take at the end. Don't call the jury a jury. That's confusing to him. And then you have to factor in the fact that, like, it's okay if you like someone, but you can't actually argue that. Like, it's if you like someone, that's great. Yes, still have to vote for the best
player. Too convoluted, this take. Too convoluted.
So do they get a grading rubric? Like, that's what I don't understand. So do they, like, at the end of it, they're getting, okay, this person won 5 individual immunities. You need to rate them on a score from 1 to 10 on how much you liked them. And then on a scale of 1 to 10 on how good you thought their strategy was. Is that what we're getting at here?
Listen, T-Dub, right back in and let us know what you want.
Yeah. T-Dub, I feel like we got a lot of takes from people that the new jury system is garbage.
Yes, I didn't put any in because there was so much of that really going around the last 2 weeks. But a lot of people really hated it. Is there one in particular you found that you liked?
No, I just felt like that was a theme of some. Like,
yeah, that was a theme. But also, I think if 10 people write in, to me, that automatically is not making it. Because, if everyone's saying the same thing, it's not such a hot take anymore, right? It's almost like the conventional wisdom. We don't need it.
Yeah, I mean, unless there are a lot of people that feel like coming out of that season, Brad should have won and the new jury system is garbage and it robbed him of the win, I don't feel like I've seen that particular take. I feel like that they say it's because it gives Jeff more of a chance to interject into the show. I mean, I feel like that there is a certain like section of the fan base that feels like anything that's coming in from Jeff or from production is inherently bad, and it should just be sort of like just like following the people around with cameras, and whatever happens happens.
That's because Survivor is 0% rigged, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, in Survivor Utopia, that's how the game works. Make a brand new start.
How about this? Players like Savage, Terry, and Brad aren't bad. People don't like them because they aren't super strategic. Alpha male character types are judged more harshly than other players by the wimpy non-leaders that make up the online community because they're all jealous of the alpha male's chiseled aesthetic. One vote for the alpha males from Mike C.
I think this is really getting into like some of the deep-seated insecurities of some of the fans of Survivor.
Non-leader.
Yeah.
So, Rob, right now, Paul Azelson is the leader.
Yes.
Do we declare him the winner, or do we get to give our hot takes and see if we could top Paul and Megan and Michael Friday's takes and see what happens?
Well, Keith, I've wasted all of my hot takes on 7 years of Survivor podcasting, so if you guys have some, feel free.
Okay. Liana, you want to go first?
Sure. I'll hit it off. Okay. All right. So my first hot take is that if you get medically evacuated, you should get a 24-hour window of medical treatment and should be allowed to return to the game if the doctors see fit.
Interesting.
I like it a lot.
Now,
I don't know if it's the hottest take I've ever heard, but it's a great take.
Yeah. Wow, this would be a real upset if Liana came in and won it.
Liana, you get to be on a podcast next year.
Although she can't grade herself, so I'm not necessarily sure.
So we'll each multiply ours by a half. Well, you want to grade it? Yeah. Each of ours will count for 1.5.
Here's what I think. Maybe we should...
She's honest. Liana, you could grade yourself.
Maybe we should give it to a fan vote where here's the person, the champion that came out of it, and then Liana's
take. That's good.
Take.
Yeah, grade Liana and my takes, please. And if we beat... Paul Azelson, sorry, Paul. No podcast for you next year.
Oh, yeah, because fan voting always goes so well for me.
Yes.
By the way.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
This was... listen, you came in third. Is it a coincidence, or is it that podcasters just have great takes, that the top two finishers are both podcasters, right?
Yeah, I think that you sort of are able to hone your craft, hone your takes when you're doing a lot of podcasting over the years. In terms of the Liana take, Liana, what's to prevent people from sort of faking, hey, I really like it's the middle of a hurricane. I need the medical treatment. I'm passed out. I need to be treated and then go and return to the game. How do we prevent people from abusing the system?
Well, I think if you are So, for example, this would be up to the doctor's discretion, but it would be if you have a legitimate injury. I mean, the thing is like if you're trying to fake something like, oh, I have back pain, I think there needs to be some type of medical metric that can that the doctors would say, like, yes, this person has some form of injury. We can fix it within 24 hours and send them back. So I would think that there would be a way to work around somebody trying to like fake their way out.
Okay. So the doctors would really have to use a lot of discretion in when they would do this. They could put somebody back into the game. I just feel like for the most part, if somebody is, you know, so seriously injured that they require medical attention, I don't know how many of those people would have been able to return to the game in 24 hours.
I think you name Eric. If he had another hour, he's probably back in the game, right? Eric Reichenbach.
Right. It seems like a very isolated thing. And, you know, for...
Right. Caleb's never coming back. Certain people are... Scoopin's never coming back. Certain people are
right. Scoopin's never coming back. Caleb's never coming back. But I think that there are a lot, especially, I mean, think about how many injuries there have been that are kind of close to the knee that really you just need to be able to take them to a hospital, clean it out, get it sanitized really well. Wrap it up, and I think you could send them back into the game.
I mean, you are the medical expert, but I mean, from what I've always heard with that, it's like that then if anything else gets in there, you know, you could lose the leg.
Well, I mean, they would continue to monitor it, but I think to just, if there is a fix that would be available, I think that they should like, give it a shot and give them a chance
to
come back.
Scenario,
but what if you get pulled again? Right. Then you're out, right? Second pull, you don't get 24 hours.
Right,
can we agree
yeah,
on
exactly,
that?
Right.
Like, Penner
okay.
needed surgery. I'm not sure. I don't believe that Neil ended up having surgery. And I remember him, like, doing, like, the rowing machine at Ponderosa. So I'm not sure necessarily, like, how long of a hospital stay he had. But I feel like it was maybe a couple days, because then I remember hearing that Nick Majorana got to the Ponderosa. I kind of feel like that, and again, I'm just sort of, like, talking out of my butt here, but I feel like that if they only need you for like medical attention for like, you know, a few hours, I kind of feel like they do just bring you back. So I don't know necessarily what the cutoff is of I guess if it, is it overnight they don't bring you back,
right? Yeah, I mean, I had said 24 hours, which is completely arbitrary that I decided in my hot take.
It'd
but,
be interesting to
on the
know.
Challenge they let you go to the hospital and come back,
right?
Yeah, see, that's okay. That's yeah, that's kind of what I
and
meant.
That's happened
I mean,
on Big Brother also.
Right, yeah. Right, where people have been able to come out, get whatever fixed, and then go back in. But
right. So it'd be interesting to know, you know, how many people, how many survivors would have been able to stay in the game if this was actually implemented. But yeah, I'm fine with this. I'd probably give it a 7 or an 8.
Yeah, I also give it a 7. So, Liana, cool. You're tied with Paul.
You're in the mix.
Well, actually, Rob, it's 7. You can't say 7 or 8.
I'll give,
that's
I'll
too
give
cold
it a
of
7.
A take.
I'll give it a 7.
Okay.
Hey.
So that's a 21. You're tied with Paul.
Okay.
You have to go on the cool. podcast with Paul now.
Okay.
How many takes do you have, Liana?
Well, I got a couple, but you go next.
I'll go, and then we could maybe go rapid fire.
Okay.
Here's my I'll throw one out there. If Russell Hantz is never cast on Survivor, the show is 100% canceled after Heroes versus Villains. There are so many people who just got back into the show from the ads and hearing about Russell in season 19, myself included, and I believe Rob Cesternino included, started watching again during Samoa. I just think the show could not have handled it.
Then maybe there's no Rob has a podcast and Survivor is better off.
That's right. Well, it's possible it's better off, but the show would have been canceled. There's no way it makes it. And even if you're not a Russell fan, he is probably the most important person in the history of the show because of that.
Okay. Let's see. So, I mean, I would have to go back and look at the numbers. Because the thing is like, so, okay, so people start watching again because of Russell. Let's say that assumption is true. Then we have such fantastic seasons such as Nicaragua and Redemption Island. I mean, is Russell strong enough to keep people watching through those seasons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, apparently he was. And again, he's on Redemption Island.
Yes. Well, that's part of the problem. So then Redemption Island, the problem might have been better.
Well, the season
might have been better.
All
Redemption Island might be the best season yet, Keeve.
It's like if the Mets won the World Series this year, Rob. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But if the if somehow they let, you know, 20 and 40 teams into the World Series, then if they won, we'd be able to give them a pass for a few years and stop being Mets fans. Whereas if this season ends up being a disaster like we think it is, and then they have four more bad years, we might be, you know, following lacrosse in a few years.
That's possible.
You know, there might not be Mets fans.
I think it's definitely a fair take. I have called Russell Hantz Survivor Viagra. I think he comes in at a point when the show does need a boost. He does provide that in Survivor Samoa. I do think that Heroes versus Villains is big whether or not Russell Hance is in it. I don't think that he is the sole reason why Heroes versus Villains ends up being a good season. Again, he does stir the pot quite a bit and really does bring on a lot of the action. You do have to factor in, though, that probably Redemption Island is a better season than Rob versus Russell. So maybe something happens there. But I think it's a pretty solid take, Keeve. I'll give you a 6 on that.
No, I thank you.
Yeah, I was going to give it a 6 too, but I feel bad because you gave mine a 7.
No, Liana, listen,
sorry.
This is the hot takeoff. Don't feel bad. Give me a 0. That's what Rob gives most people. Mm-hmm. Liana, you want to go rapid fire through your last few takes?
Okay, sure. Here are my last few couple takes. 1, Jeff needs to be replaced as host.
All right, got to cross that 2. One off my list.
Oh, okay. 2, Big Brother, with live feeds included, is a better show than Survivor.
And
last one, Jeff should announce how many advantages or idols are in the game at the merge.
Okay. You want to give those number grades, Keeve?
I mean, they were so rapid fire. Maybe the listeners should give them, but I think those were all very good.
Yeah. Okay. I will go 0, 0, 8.
No, the Jeff quitting is good. I had a little bit where I was going to say he should phase himself out. Maybe like the spring season, he should, you know, bring in whoever, you know, we know it's Cochran. And by the way, 40 people emailed in and said either Cochran should be the host or I will jump off a bridge if Cochran is the next host. That was like 4 different people's
yeah.
takes. But, you know, maybe start phasing himself out, just be the showrunner or, you know, some people want him to stop being the showrunner and just being the host. But that's a good take. All those takes are pretty strong, honestly.
Okay. Keeve.
All right. I'll give a couple of mine. Yes. Game Changers is the worst season Andrea's ever been on.
Whoa, that's your take?
By the way, I might have just won that based on Rob's. I might win that. Hold your horses,
okay.
Paul Mendelson. Don't.
Game Changers is the worst season Andrea's been on.
Excluding actual criminals, Jeff Varner's the worst person to ever play Survivor. The most dramatic moment in Survivor history didn't actually happen on the show. It was when Jeff went through the audience revealing the second chancers. People talk all the time about how being the first boot is better than not even making the show, so... There you go. How about, you already stole my Jeff should quit. How about this? Carmone is actually a good season. Season like Game Changers have at most one or two memorable moments that most viewers will remember years later. Carmone has dozens like the Dawn Brenda T thing, Brandon Hans's meltdown, the epic Three Amigos Tribal Council, maybe the best family visit ever with the floating restaurant taunting, I think it was Brenda and Dawn.
Yeah, to correct myself on that, I said that at one yes. point, talking about that season, Pearl Islands is the mm-hmm. best family visit ever. Could be the second best.
Yeah, that was great, yes. Yeah, even if it's the second best, my point stands. Plus, Franny being a double first boot, a fantastic double boot episode with massive blindsides of both Brenda and Andrea, plus all the boring people who voted out pre-merge. In fact, if Eric doesn't get medevaced at the final 5, maybe he wins immunity, engineers a Cochran blindside, Carmone is then considered a top 5 season, and last but not least, Eddie's dog bar.
Yeah.
So those are my takes. Those are Liana's. Did we win?
Okay. Good rapid fire takes, Keeve.
I think the most dramatic moment in Survivor was when Jeff rode the jet ski mm-hmm. with the votes.
Yes.
I think
yeah,
that's the best.
Yes, for sure.
Yes. Okay. This was a great hot takeoff. I think we've done some fantastic work here. I'm sure there will be plenty of hot takes in the comments of this actually wasn't good. These takes weren't
yes,
that hot.
No question.
Yes. Nobody will be happy.
By the way, you know what the good thing is, Rob?
What's that?
Literally every listener could have participated and been on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So many hundreds of listeners emailed in and gave us their takes, including one this second, which I don't think that guy's getting in.
Yeah.
Should I just read the latest one? What if you want? What if the guy who emailed in at like 2:00 in the morning went, and the people who didn't write in have no right to complain here because they could have beaten us and they chose not to. So there's no complaining in the comments yes. for this podcast.
No, the complaints will come from the people who sent them in, and then you didn't pick their takes, and they would have won.
Oh, I will grade. How about this?
Yeah.
If you complain in the comments about your take, I will send it to Liana, and we will give you a grade in the comments.
Yes. Okay.
And it will be lower than 21, I can guarantee.
Right. The new take that just came in is Survivor Cambodia is the greatest season in Survivor history.
Okay.
Oh, see, that one totally would have
yeah.
won.
Yeah. You know, should we save that? For the next year's hot takeoff. I also think, Rob, if we do this again, people know what we're looking for, and I think they'll realize they have to up the ante, give us some superlatives, some real adjectives, like this is the best, this is trash, this is garbage. I think the next one, similar to Big Brother 1, like you referenced before, I think the next one could really be a Big Brother 2. I don't know if that's good or not.
I don't know if that's a plug or not. The groundwork is laid. People know what we want. Come up with all the hot takes, and we'll sort of like cook them over the course of the next year. And then when we come back and can do this again, it'll be an even greater success.
Wait, can I give you an idea for Paul Azelson's podcast?
Yes.
Okay, you know how Mike Bloom does the last podcast usually during voicemail season?
Yes, supposedly, yes.
You know how Mike Bloom stole Paul Azelson's gig on Survivor Historians?
Yes.
You think what I'm thinking here?
Oh!
Get ready for a takeover! Sorry, Mike. Sorry, okay.
Mike did a great job. He really helped me. We would have had, if you think it was good or bad, it would have been worse without Mike.
Thank you. Okay. Great stuff. Okay. So for more Keeve Winokur, of course, you can hear Keeve every week on the Seinfeld Post-Show Recap for 15 more weeks. If you are already a listener, we have not let any new listeners come on for the final season. But for those of you guys who have already been listening, you know where to find it. I'm not even going to plug it. And then Liana Boris, of course, has been, is RuPaul's Drag Race done, Liana?
No, we still have two more episodes left.
Okay, so two more episodes of Liana on the RuPaul's Drag Race wrap up. And then wherever else we can find a spot to put you, Liana.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Oh, spot too? Yeah,
sorry, Mike.
Yes, you can have Mike. Well, I'm giving it away, Mike.
Get ready for a takeover.
Sorry, Mike.
By the way, also, nice. Can I plug... 32 fans, next week we are ranking all 50 states. We have me, Chester, and Antonio Mazzaro ranking all 50 United States from 50 to 1.
Perfect.
Or should I say from Florida to 1?
Florida to 1. All right. Good stuff. All right. Thanks so much to everybody listening to the Hot Takeoff. We've got a lot of great stuff coming up on the podcast this next week, including our 2000th episode special. So be on the lookout for that. Subscribe to Rob as a podcast. Rob has a website.com/iTunes. Looking forward to hearing your comments. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.